This is the Roaring Elephant Podcast, and here I am with my marketing-friendly co-host, Jan. Hello, Jan.
Hello, Dave. How do you know I have such an affection for everything that's marketing?
I heard you love marketing, actually. I heard you are marketing's number one supporter. You believe that marketing is the answer to all solutions in the world, and if only we had more marketing, the world would be a better place.
Well, it's the best solution for one thing in the world, and it is giving us content for a podcast episode.
Oh, dear. Strap yourself in, folks. This one is going to be... something like that. This is not going to be... I apologize in advance to all our listeners. If you make your way through this episode, if it happens not to be terrible, then that's a miracle.
And this topic was Dave's idea, not my idea. I claim total innocence.
That's not quite true.
Damn.
The initial seed for the topic was absolutely yours.
Yes.
I just then actually did some research. I know, shock horror. And yes, it's turned into a full-blown episode, and here we are. Go on, you started interesting voyage of discovery. Take us into it.
We are going to talk about what I consider to be the biggest marketing fraud, lie, hype, whatever you want to call it, of the decade. And it's a thing called sovereign clouds. It's the thing everybody wants and nobody wants. And apparently all of the three hyperscalers are now going to do it. Some of them again. And Dave actually thinks it's a good idea.
God, he's already twisting words. That's not what I said at all.
Okay, what did you say then?
You immediately lent into this is all marketing. And my point is, like, this is definitely not just marketing. You know, for those that aren't familiar, so why sovereign cloud? What is a sovereign cloud? You know, what does this all mean? Why would anybody even care?
But we don't.
Data sovereignty is all about keeping your data within a certain set of boundaries that are maybe legally defined, for reasons that could be the safety and security or the trust that your data will not go beyond your geographic borders or whatever it might be. So typically, data sovereignty is one of the reasons that many organizations have not moved to cloud, because if they deploy things in their own data centers and they operate on-premise, then they have more control over, the flows of their data. If you go to a public cloud provider, let's say you sign up and you whack all your data into, AWS in the Netherlands, for example. I just picked that at random. You may have thought that means that's where all of your data goes and stays, but that is not necessarily the case. All of the large hyperscalers are built on very complex backends that span across the globe and many countries in a variety of interesting and different ways. So even though you might run all of your instances and deploy all of your data into object storage buckets in a particular region, that doesn't necessarily mean that data might never leave that region as it transits across. It also means that it doesn't mean that other people from outside the region might not have access to that data. This is a huge simplification. I can see Jan has his hand up and would like to say something.
Yeah, I'm going to be polite now. I do think we should be honest as well that the hyperscalers themselves, Amazon, Google, Azure, and the Chinese one obviously as well, I think that they do want to keep things local. I mean, they have been saying that if you split it in a data center somewhere, it's going to stay there, and we will do our best to do that. I do think we can believe them in that. The problem is that all of these three hyperscalers, all five of them, are dependent on governments that have very draconian data gathering surveillance legislation in place. I mean, China, don't need to talk about that, I think. But the three American ones, well, there is legislation in America that US can just ask Azure, Google, and Amazon to get that data from the Dutch data center because it is owned, operated by a American entity. So just want to make sure the differentiation that we're, I'm not actually blaming the hyperscalers here. No, honestly, they try their best to keep things sovereign already. It's just that from a legal point of view, they just can't enforce it. They just can't promise it. And the second thing, it's not just data. As recently was demonstrated, it's also the services. I mean, a little while ago, the international, what's it called again? What's the English name I'm looking for? The International Justice Department that's in The Hague. The ICC, the court that does things across, that does the Israel Gaza, that does the Ukraine. Come on, you know what it is. ICC Strafhof. It's the thing in The Hague. Anyway, they're supposed to be looking at governments doing bad things. And at some point, their Azure-based mail was apparently no longer available to them. So apart from just data being exfiltrated or shared where it shouldn't be, it's also a dependency on services, again, managed, owned, governed by American companies or Chinese companies or non-local governments that can enforce the stopping of those services at some point.
Yeah. As I say, this is not that... I fully agree with you. Like, the cloud providers would love to be able to do this themselves, but for a variety of reasons, some of which are technical, some of which are logistics, some of which are legal. Like, it's just not possible for them to do within their own standard ways that they operate at scale today.
But so, I was talking about the International Criminal Court in The Hague. That's the one I was looking for.
There we go. Wonderful. All right. So... that's sovereign clouds. That's what they are.
And that's why some people want them.
Why you would want them? Yeah.
I mean, typically think of your military. The Dutch defense would kind of like what they don't want to share through NATO. Well, not share. Mm-hmm. And as you said, that's a big reason for a lot of government organizations not to be allowed to go to cloud, because there is that risk. And I think it's also a risk, for example, for... innovations. Think of universities developing new things, patenting things. Well, before it gets patented, if you put it on the cloud somewhere, there's a chance it can get usurped. Now, governments have a habit of either not caring about patents or just saying, well, that patent isn't valid because we need it for national security. So, the moment it goes into a public cloud somewhere today, US, China, the states that govern the public hyperscalers, they can just grab and pick and choose.
Indeed. So, the picture between the three hyperscalers, let's start off with AWS. I would say there'll be links in the show notes, but there probably won't be. So just, Google for yourself. If you look at AWS, they have, I think, the weirdest story on this. Because, like, sovereign cloud is not a new topic. And in fact, when we get to Azure, Jon will it'll be story time with Jon, and he'll tell us a little bit about ye olde worldy happenings. But... if we start off with AWS, they actually announced, and there's a blog post that you can read, their independent sovereign cloud in Europe back in October 2023. I have a feeling we may have even talked about this particular blog post back then. It's been updated. They are now launching it in 2025, i.e. this year as we are recording. So, you know, about 18 months, radio silent. Why would they have recently updated it to say, oh, yeah, we're launching it this year, definitely.
I know.
Go on, tell us, Jan. Is the answer marketing? All right. So, more recently than that, Google... So, I view... I think I would agree with you that I view Amazon's story here. I do actually view it as basically just pure marketing because it looks like they've done nothing for 18 months. I'm sure that's not true. I'm sure lots of people have been working very hard in the background, but it basically looks like no one's been doing anything. They just have this one thing and, you know, it just looks and smells like a blog post that they put out to create a bit of a splash and then, you know, forgot about it for a while until something forced their hand. So that thing that forced their hand is Google actually seemed to have a, I'm going to say, a more complete sovereign cloud. I'm not sure I was quite go as far to say offering yet, but program, let's call it that. Because they have already identified a number of partners, and you can... doing a little bit of digging about and searching, all the partner names reflected on the Google cloud.google.com/sovereign-cloud page. But basically, you've got Airtel that operates in India, CNTXT, which operates in Saudi Arabia, Clarence, which operates in France. I believe it's that Clarence. Could be a different Clarence. There are lots of Clarences on the internet. Polo Strategico Nazionale, which operates in Italy. KDDI, which operates in Japan. Someone that I'm not quite comfortable pronouncing, but like it's because there's ones instead of I's, which is weird. But let's pretend they aren't, and let's just call them Minsalt, which operates in India. Sens, which operates in France. T-Systems, which operates in Germany. And WWT, which stands for Worldwide Technology, but they are first launching with a US government-based sovereign cloud. So, again, this could all still be marketing, but digging in a little bit, it looks like Google is actually going full steam ahead here. They're not just saying, oh yeah, we're going to do a sovereign cloud and it'll be somewhere in Europe. They've figured out partners that they're going to work with, and they seem to be actually doing something with a lot more detail, a lot more, it seems to be a lot more real. And then we've got Azure. So at this point, I will hand across to Jan for story time with Jan.
Yes, Azure was kind of the granddaddy of the whole soft cloud thing, because when I was there 6-7 years ago.
Soft cloud?
Sorry?
Soft cloud?
Yeah, the Microsoft cloud, that's the one, yeah.
Okay. That's what you said.
It was called Gov Cloud in those days, not soft cloud.
That makes more sense.
Yeah. And I think the reason that Amazon did their marketing blurb in 2023 was a response to Azure's actual deployment of a Gov Cloud in Germany. It was managed, operated by T-Systems. And Microsoft didn't do anything with it. It was just they put in servers, they put the stuff in there, and it was all being done by T-Systems. And that was very important, of course, because Microsoft or Google or Amazon are not able to create a sovereign cloud in another country. Because the moment that they manage it or govern it or have any kind of commercial link with it, it automatically falls under that draconian legislation that means that US government can just grab everything they want. So it needs to be totally divested, isolated from, disconnected, I think the word was we looked for heard earlier, from the actual hyperscaler there. Now, the GovCloud in Germany from Azure, apparently they've announced it again because, well, it's not around anymore. Because it was around for about 2 years. And again, with being around, I mean, you could go to Microsoft and buy GovCloud, whatever you're going to call it, services. But it was hugely expensive because obviously Microsoft wanted everything to cost the same for them. T-System put some extra stuff on top of there, and some other in-between parties also put their own percentage on top of it. So anything you could do in Azure normal cost at least twice as much in the GovCloud. And the amount of services was very small. I think, for example, that the managed Kubernetes, for example, wasn't available. And that's very simple because to have a managed Kubernetes environment, for example, you need to have more than one data center for high availability, disaster recovery, things like that. The T-Systems thing was one data center. So anything that required anything that had multi-zones or something like that simply wasn't able to work there because they didn't have the infrastructure there. Long story short, too late, I know. Nobody used it. They never sold it. Well, never say never. I'm sure somebody signed a check somewhere, but it just went away and became something that on paper was an offering, which for me means it was more of a marketing drive than actual a product that they wanted to actively sell. It was more the capability of being able to say, we have GovCloud, Google and Amazon don't. So if you want something for our government, you have to come to us. And it worked because they did gain a number of public tenders by being able to check that box where the other ones couldn't. And those things in the end just ended up running in the public cloud on Azure. With, of course, some things not being able to go because data sovereign, privacy and things like that and so on. And for me, that's basically why I started this episode with. It's a marketing thing because they just put this stuff out, these three hyperscales, because the other ones are doing it. Not because they think they want to do it, because they know that they can't, they have to divest it. It has to become somebody else's thing. So they lose the control, it fragments it. But if the others do it, then they also have to have it because they need a check in the box.
Yeah. And that this brings us up to date with, so Microsoft recent announcements. They made some announcements in, I think, May and again in June, about the fact that, hey, we tried that thing, now we're doing it all over again. So
version 2, been improved.
Yeah, so they are launching, I think. Who can tell? It's very, very...
It's like NVIDIA's video card launches, their paper launches.
Yeah. So Discover Bleu, which is a cloud formed jointly by both Orange and Capgemini, which is available in France, and Delios Cloud, which is a subsidiary of SAP that delivers Microsoft Cloud services in Germany, which is hosted and operated entirely in Germany. So the T-Mobile one is no more. It's Delios now.
I know they're at Google now.
Yeah.
So, I do think it's normal that it's happening at the moment because the whole Trump culture has put in fear in Europe and a lot of cloud spending has been put on hold. And this is one way that these hyperscalers try to unlock those funds, I think. And I think, again, regardless of anything else, the situation, the political situation at the moment is making Europe become more aware of the limitations that we put ourselves into. I think that's a good thing. And it might just be enough for this to actually become a reality. And I think for Google, I actually don't want to be totally negative because there is a chance that Google is doing this in earnest. Not because they want GovCloud, they couldn't care less, but because Google is still the smallest by far cloud of the three. This, because they're doing it very, the things you researched, thank you for that, they have different countries, not just Europe, they're also in Japan, they're in India. This also has a little bit of, you know what, we can't build our cloud out fast enough because basically we're an advertising company and we don't care. But hey, if partners want to do it, we can give you the technology, the knowledge to build it yourself. You give us a franchise fee, whatever you want to call it, and we do it that way. So for Google, I do think this might be a totally different initiative to grow their presence in the in the cloud. And hey, let's call it Sovereign Cloud, and hey, we can play with the big boys now. So that might actually be the thing that pushes this whole SovGov cloud over the brink and might make it a reality. That being said, I still think that the costs for the services, just look at government spending, it's always a tender. And who wins the tender? The one that offers it at the lowest price. And there's a couple of extra criteria in there, but typically, if you're twice the price of the rest, you're not going to win.
Yeah, but there are also situations where you can be half the price, but if you don't fit all the criteria, you get thrown out anyway. And that this is where these kind of sovereign cloud offerings, this is the space that they play in. Because yes, they are absolutely going to be more expensive than your vanilla GCP or Azure or AWS. They absolutely are going to be more expensive. These organizations will not be able to operate these as cheaply, as efficiently, frankly, probably not even as reliably as the major CSPs. And I think that this is the trade-off that people who value data sovereignty over and above all of those other things, they will pay more, they will suffer more downtime, they will have a less functional cloud, but they will have, you know, data sovereignty that they can believe in. And that will have to be a trade-off that they make. And anyone that believes anything different, that, these will just be, we just like the AWS experience, or just like the GCP experience, or just like the vanilla Azure experience, just run somewhere else, you're dreaming. Like, these organizations, I'm sure, have lots of very, very smart people working for them, but not at this size and scale and level of expertise as the major CSPs. It's just not true. It's just not the way things work. They don't pay as highly. They haven't been operating these things for literal decades at this point. It's not going to be a smooth, seamless, you know, journey for people that go and adopt these clouds. But for a lot of organizations who literally can't move to the cloud right now because of data sovereignty reasons, this is the one ray of hope that they have. And for that reason, to go back to, you know, Jan's initial war cry of it's all just marketing, that's why I don't think it's marketing, because there is a real business case for organizations who want the agility of cloud, want to move to cloud, but have so far been hamstrung, that this is finally opening up for them. Will it be a success? Will it be, you know, will the very much paper and lacking of substance launches of that you can see from Azure and AWS, will they actually turn into something real? Who knows? Will GCP, as you maybe suggested, like, will they maybe steal a bit of a march on this? I don't know. I actually hope so as well. Like, I'm sort of rooting for them to actually do something a little bit different and shake the market up a little bit, because right now it's been pretty stagnant for a while. But this is not going to be the answer for everybody. Like, I don't see, if people are comfortable with the level of data sovereignty they get from their existing CSP, I don't see anybody moving to one of these sovereign clouds anytime soon, because it just won't make sense unless you are forced to for some reason.
Yeah, and I also don't think it'll actually free up restraints for people that can't go to the cloud today, because of the extra cost, the reduction in capabilities. I mean, this is a solved problem. You have your own data center, or you have a private cloud, some kind of partner in Atos. There are a bunch of local European entities that have data centers that allow you to run your workload in their data centers. Do I really want to pay that much more to have the Azure/Google/AWS portal, web portal look and feel? I mean, why? That's the that was the problem with the Azure GovCloud then as well. I mean, they looked at it and they said, okay, we can say with our current partner that kind of runs the stuff, we don't have the problem. Because why do you go to cloud? Because you don't want to maintain your own servers anymore. You want to kind of divest the whole data server. You don't have to go to cloud for that. You go to a partner for that. Why do you want to go to cloud? For the agility, the fastness, the upgradability, and that kind of stuff. And that is all the things that, in my opinion, will always be missing from the soft clouds because of this smaller scale, all the things you discussed earlier. So when you're going to put a tender out for something that could run on a soft cloud, it might just as well run on a partner private cloud, and it's going to be way cheaper. And that's, for me, unless the Google thing, again, for Google, that's the one potential for them to keep the prices down and have a reason to have a kind of full portfolio of services available, because it's not just to do soft cloud marketing, but because that's their expansion strategy. If I'm right in that, again, I have no inside knowledge at all. But if I'm right about that, then I do see that a potential success. And if they make it, the others will have to. And at that point, competition will make sure that all the things I've just mentioned that are a bad thing will more or less go away as much as possible. Because again, the whole idea that I mentioned earlier, not being high available disaster recovery, well, Google, if they do the thing in France, in Germany, and in Italy, they have disaster recovery, high availability inside Europe. And I mean, that's the thing that makes me give them a chance.
I think that I was kind of thinking about your comments around the, you know, you can go and get something from a traditional service provider. But in my experience, and my experience is just my experience, I get that. But in my experience, most of those services are pretty crap. They're pretty bare bones. Then they're not all that fully featured. Whereas this, it's a cut down version of all of the services that these cloud providers, or it will be a cut down version, I'm sure, but it's going to be more industry standard, if you can call it that, than a traditional, pick your consultancy organization of choice running stuff outsourced for you. I think it's a different kind of experience here that you won't typically get from just having one of the big consulting firms doing stuff for you outsourced, however you want to talk about it.
I agree with you 5 years ago, but today, the things you will not be getting in soft clouds are those actual SaaS level services, the serverless part, because for serverless, you need to have much more. That's not going to work. So basically, it's going to be limited to IaaS things, which means virtual machines and S3 kind of situations. Up until a couple of years ago, yes, you would have a VMware cloud somewhere in a third party data center, and VMware, I mean, it's fine. But today, it's all Kubernetes. And the moment that a third-party data center can offer you a Kubernetes service and an S3 bucket service, probably backed by, I don't know, hyperconverged architectures, NetApps, whatever, doesn't matter. As long as you have that abstraction layer of S3 buckets, S3 type buckets, Blobstore, called Blob Storage, and Kubernetes containers, 99% of use cases are covered. Because again, things like Office 365 or Google Drive, well, Google Drive is an S3 kind of thing, but Google Docs and things like that, that will never be available in a soft GovCloud. Never say never. Again, if Google is successful and Google does this, if they actually go to the step and they make Google Docs available in these sovereign clouds, that would be the thing that makes it successful, I think. Will they do it? I don't know. I think it's not possible because they kind of require the whole worldwide interconnection of things. But that's going to be interesting to watch.
Yeah, time will tell. Maybe this is something that we keep an eye on next year.
Well, yes. I mean, if you look at how the hyperscalers, they kind of take 18 months to do an update on their blocks around this. So we could probably keep that cadence.
Yeah. We'll speak to you again in 18 months' time and check in on this.
And does that mean that we are done for today? Yes. The nodding of Dave tells me that this is all the time you have today. We're actually running a bit late, to be honest. We have patrons. If you want to become a patron as well, we thank you very much. Supporting us does help us get this quality stuff in the air. You can go to our website for an overview of all our episodes. And obviously, if you have any information or feedback for the podcast, send email to podcast@rollingoffence.org. Until next time, my name is The Cake is a Lie. John?
And my name is Sovereign Dave.
I look forward to talking to you again next week. Goodbye.
See you then.